San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB, presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from KFMB Studios in beautiful Kearny Mesa in San Diego. We are coming to you with 50,000 watts of power. We are heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, out to the desert. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's a marathon runner. He is a family office expert advising many high net worth families. And he's a core member of the Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable of San Diego. And his name is Richard Muzio. Richard, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Does anybody in this room have green on? Because I don't. Joel?
I don't know.
Joe?
I can't say that. Are you?
No. But no, I'm like all blue.
Well, you know what?
I'm little boy
wait
blue
a minute,
tonight.
Wait a minute. I got a green wire leading into my computer here. So
it doesn't count.
Hey, let me tell you, I've been eating corned beef and cabbage for like the past 3-4 days. I just can't get enough of it for some reason. And we had some today as well. So maybe the studio needs to be a little bigger. I don't know. But we'll...
Well, anyway, I had dinner out at my mom's because it was my brother Bob's birthday yesterday. So happy birthday, Bob. So I went out to have dinner at my mom's with my brother.
Excellent.
He's 56. Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's not so old, Richard.
I know.
Well, he's your older brother, right?
He's my older brother.
Okay. Way older.
I will always be younger.
Right.
Always.
Right. Yes. Now, your young wife has taken up running like a banshee here.
Yeah, Mary, let's see. So yesterday, Mary ran the St. Patrick's Day 10K at Mission Bay and ran her first 10K ever in 56 minutes, which is a 9-minute pace. And so
people are going to realize she just took this up like a couple
4 weeks ago. Yeah. Yeah, picked up her first gold medal, as you know, last Sunday. We talked about it in the right. San Diego 5K. And so I guess next Sunday we're doing the Ghirardelli Chocolate Run 15K. She's going 9.3 miles in downtown San Diego next Sunday.
Nice.
And then I guess you get chocolate strawberries and stuff at the finish line. She's training for the Cinco de Mayo half marathon on May 5th. That's going to be her first half marathon, but I guess...
Now, where does that start now? Is that a kind of a cross-border thing?
That's up at Irvine Spectrum.
Huh.
So just up in Irvine. So I guess she's a natural because she just gets out and flies around.
That sounds like a big event.
Yeah, well, actually, that's not so big. The LA Marathon today was, by the way, and this is what's pretty amazing. In the women's event, the third place finisher in the women's was Dina Castor, who's 40 years old. Third place for the women at the LA Marathon today. That's really impressive.
Huh. I think my mother better take up a little jogging because her chihuahua got out the door again today, and I get a phone call on the way into the studio, and I go, I can't talk about this right now. I got to get in, got to focus. But anyway, she did catch up with the chihuahua. So
she's at least, you know, the only dog that ever attacked me was out for a practice run.
Really?
Was a chihuahua. And I'm running along the street. I'm like, there's something on my ankle because they're so little. I'm like, oh, there's a dog attached to my ankle.
Well, they're small, but they think they're a Great Dane or something.
Oh, so yeah. I mean, they're just fearless.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, what is that? Oh, there's a chihuahua attached to my ankle. It's like, what's going on?
They do make a little noise here and there, but good watchdog, good companion, can't complain. But
good,
they,
yeah, exactly.
They got you safe and sound again. We won't talk about the jump out the window a few weeks ago.
No,
the car window, but anyway.
The disappearing chihuahua.
Anyway, Belle, you stay home tonight and behave yourself. All right.
Okay.
On with the show.
On with the show. Let's talk about cost segregation. Okay, look, so here's a story before we introduce our guest. Then we'll after I tell my story, we'll introduce our guest. Okay. So... last November, right before Thanksgiving, right before the Oceanside Turkey Trot, and right before I had eye surgery, I'm sitting out at an attorney's office in Carlsbad with one of my clients, who is a real estate broker, very successful. I won't say where, because this is going to be private. We're actually going to talk about a real case study.
Mm-hmm.
And we got together with the attorney to go over their estate planning to make some changes in light of what we thought the new laws were going to be, and we nailed that right on the head, predicted that.
Mm-hmm.
But then after the meeting with the attorney, we hung around and used another empty office in the attorney's office to go over their year-end income tax planning, because this is November, and December, of course, is the year-end, for those of you out there who don't know that. And so my client brought in their numbers from the real estate brokerage and brought in their numbers from all of the rental properties that they own, and I brought in, you know, a copy of last year's tax return on my computer, and I was going over the current year numbers for 2012 comparing to 2011, and of course, as the market has picked up over the last year or two, their business is absolutely booming. Mm-hmm. And they've been around for 30 years, doing what they've been doing for 30 years. So, they, you know, they were affected by the downturn, but they made it through, like a lot of established businesses. And so I'm...
These are commercial brokers,
yeah,
right?
Commercial... Well, okay. Commercial and residential real estate broker.
Okay.
And they also happen to own their own building where they house their residential real estate brokerage business. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going through the numbers with the client right there on the computer. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, you're going to owe, well, six figures of income tax over, you know... It was close to $200,000 in income tax. I said, that's what you're going to owe this year. And they aren't used to paying that much every year because, you know, when things sort of went sideways in 2008 and 2009, like I said, they made it through the recession, but of course their business slowed down, and so they weren't making as much money, and so they didn't pay as much tax for a couple or 3 years. And so I said, you're going to owe about $200,000 of income taxes in April. And I was thinking, I'm glad I just got their estate planning done because I thought they were going to have a heart attack and die right there when I told them that. And so the question became, well, what can we do to save some income taxes? And my first thought was, why don't you guys just pay me a couple hundred grand? But no, that would be overpricing my services, even though they're valuable. My first thought was, you know, I said, you, speaking to my client, you bought this building 2 years ago in 2010 when we didn't really need a lot of depreciation because your business was just coming out of, you know, sort of the downtime, so we didn't need a lot of write-off. You bought this building in 2010 that you moved your residential real estate brokerage business into, which is a big, you know, they have over 100 agents, so it's a big business, big building, big business. And I said, we didn't take a lot of depreciation in the year you moved in because we didn't need to, but there's this thing called cost segregation that allows us to take more depreciation by isolating or identifying the components of buildings that are not 39 and a half years for depreciation. In other words, a typical commercial building has to be depreciated over 39 and a half years, which means you're only getting about 2.5% of the cost, well, actually even less because you have to allocate some of the cost to land. You're not getting that much depreciation. And of course, my client, they bought what was essentially a shell, and then they put tons and tons, I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars of improvements into it. I mean, if you've ever been into a real estate brokerage office, you know what I mean. There's desks and there's walls and partitions and glass partitions and sprinkler systems and all kinds of stuff. And I said, there's this thing called cost segregation that allows us to isolate property that would be depreciated over 5 years, property that would be depreciated over 15 years instead of 39 and a half. And the fact that we didn't do this in 2010 when you bought this building and fixed it up and placed it into service and moved into it, I said, that doesn't matter because the IRS allows us to look back in a current year, 2012, and pick up in 2012 the depreciation expense that we could have taken in the earlier years, 2010, 2011, by doing what we call a cost segregation study and also filing a form that says we're changing our accounting method for how we account for depreciation. And I said, I bet we could probably get another, well, I forget what I said, but I said, you know, tens of thousands, if not over $100,000 of new or additional depreciation. Now, it's not additional depreciation in the context of 39 and a half years of time or lifespan of a building, but the point is that you can get more depreciation expense now. Granted, you don't get as much in year 37 and 38 and 39. I mean, my clients, given their age, they're in their 70s. They're not going to be here in years 37, 38, and 39. Actually, they might. They're probably going to outlive me. Mm-hmm. And so I said, why don't we do this? So I called a gentleman named Joel Grushkin, who's sitting in our studio, and this is what Joel does. So, Joel, welcome. How's that for a long-winded introduction?
That was a long-winded introduction.
Well, I'm trying to make this practical. So my point is, if you're listening to the show and you own investment real estate, or you've made substantial improvements in investment real, you know, that you own in the last few years, or this is one a lot of people forget about, if you've inherited, whether your spouse has died or you've inherited because both of your parents have died, if you've inherited real estate in the last few years that's used for investment purposes, cost segregation could save you a lot of money by accelerating depreciation. If you save tax dollars, that improves your cash flow. So, Joel Grushkin, welcome. Tell us about yourself and what you do.
Thanks, Richard. Good to be here again. And we have a company called Cost Segregation Initiatives, as you said. And we work with property owners. We work with CPAs all over the country, providing studies on a whole variety of types of commercial real estate, including apartment projects and office buildings and medical buildings.
In other words, real estate that's held for rental and investment, right?
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Even in some cases, we have clients that own multiple single-family residences that they have in a rental pool, and we do the same kind of studies. And our firm is made up of CPAs that actually do not do tax returns any longer.
They're smart.
and we have construction cost estimators. We have consulting engineers. We have our own legal counsel as well. And we do these studies, as I said, all over the country.
And the fact pattern that I described, which is a real story, and again, we have to be careful not to mention any names, is what I described somewhat typical in terms of what you come across? I don't mean in terms of how large it was or small it was, but in terms of just the general fact pattern without regard to necessarily the value of the building.
Yeah, absolutely. We see situations all the time. Some of them are brought to us by CPAs. Some of them where we're dealing directly with the property owner, and they may have just acquired a building, or they may have had the building for several years. And for some reason or another, this has never been presented to them in the past. And there is now a need for greater cash flow out of a property, and we can make that cash flow available.
Yeah, it's neat because you might say, well, wait a minute, over 39 and a half years, you're not really saving any income tax. First of all, the time value of money over a 39 and a half year period, to the extent that you're saving income taxes and improving cash flow now, if that's compounded over 39 and a half years, the savings is huge. Secondly, with regard to how we typically exit real estate, bear in mind that you can get out of real estate by exchanging, where you pay no income tax on the piece that you're selling. And then, of course, here in California, a community property state, many of my clients, they own real estate forever. I mean, for their entire lifetimes, and then the next generation inherits it. Well, when mom dies or dad dies, you get what's called a step-up in basis. You get to adjust the income tax costs to the date of death value and start depreciating it all over again. And then when the second spouse dies, you get to do that again. So you know, we say, you know, I've never met anybody who really cares how much depreciation they're going to get in year 39. Because there's so many ways to get new depreciation or to exchange tax-free into other real estate as you're building your real estate portfolio. And cash flow is king, I think, in the real estate business. Wouldn't you agree, Joel?
Absolutely. It is, you know, when we look at real estate, we usually look at three different things. We're looking at appreciation, and in the last several years, there hasn't been very much of that. We look at cash flow. And we look at tax benefits. And cash flow for a lot of commercial property owners has not been terrific. But when you start looking at the tax benefits, which tax benefits not being the reason you would typically buy, but when you put it all together, it really can make a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, a big difference is the understatement in some cases. So, Joel, in the case that I described, I just want to give our listeners sort of a feel for a real-life practical situation.
Yes, but Richard, can we take a short break? Now, I know that Justin just raised the music.
What, did your mom lose the dog again, Jeff?
No. Yes, she did.
Okay.
It's dramatic. Hang on, everybody. We'll be right back after these announcements. All right, we're back with more of Richard Money in Your Life with Richard Musio and our special guest, Regional Director of Cost Segregation Initiatives, Joel Grushkin. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Yeah, and good news, all of our listeners, the Chihuahua is in no danger. The Chihuahua is safely at home. So
the Chihuahua has landed.
The Chihuahua has landed. So anyway, getting back to my real case study. So I called Joel Grushkin, our cost segregation expert, and hooked him up with my client, because we wanted to get more depreciation to start saving some income taxes and improve my client's cash flow. Now that the business is making money hand over fist again, we need the income tax deductions. And so, Joe, what did you do? I mean, I put you in touch with the client, and you actually have to go out there and look at things, right? And when you do that, what are you looking for?
Well, the first thing we did actually was get a copy of the current depreciation schedule so we could see what had gone on with the property since it was acquired.
Which was almost nothing, because we did building 80%, land 20%.
Right.
I think we did take 5-year depreciation on the phone system.
I think you did.
Yeah.
And anyway, but we need to basically get a baseline so we could know what was done. We knew what they had paid for the building, but we didn't know what the split between land and building was. But once we got that and got a description of the building, square footage of the building, square footage of the lot, number of floors, and so on, we actually did a preliminary analysis so that we could give them a feeling for what this study would yield for them in terms of increase in depreciation, extra tax benefits, and really what the cash flow improvement would be.
And that's not based on their building per se, but rather your vast experiences with buildings that are similar to their large commercial real estate building that's single story.
That's correct.
Okay. Right. Got it.
And then from there, once they were able to see what the numbers looked like, what we believed in the estimate the benefits would be, and what the cost would be to do the study, they made that determination, I think jointly with you, mm-hmm. that the cost benefit would make a great deal of sense for them.
Yeah, and we'll be overt here. I mean, the cost was less than $10,000 to do this work. I'm not going to give out Joel's exact pricing, but the point is we're not talking about pricing that's such that the typical real estate owner can't afford this. It's extremely cost effective. And when you hear what the benefit was, you're going to say, wow, that's Joel didn't charge enough money.
Yeah, that's what we feel sometimes too. But, yeah. But anyway, the next step was to then get a set of plans, and see how that building was constructed. And then we got copies of the build-out information, so we could see the as-built drawings and really look at the accounting data on how much money was spent and what it was spent on.
Yeah, and just to give everybody sort of a feel, my clients always own the building in a limited liability company, an LLC, for asset protection reasons, but in this case, the tenant improvements were paid by the corporation that runs the actual real estate brokerage business, so we had two different kinds of things going on with the same building. We had the shall we say, the structure or the shell itself, and then all of the things that we put into it.
That's correct. And so we really had to look at it like two studies. And one was breaking down the building itself and looking at what inside the building could be considered personal property with a shorter lifetime, typically 5 years, and then also looking at the exterior of the building, which is walkways, driveways, landscape, which has a 15-year life. And basically, the whole building had been was being depreciated over 39 years. So the idea was that we were going to go back, break everything out using our techniques, and make those changes to determine what the real tax benefits would be, and then go through the change in accounting form.
And you estimated approximately how much new depreciation. Do you have that in front of you? Because I remember, but I wanted you to say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we estimated that for the 2012 tax year, mm-hmm. That we would increase depreciation over the straight line method by around $104,000.
Yeah, and just so everybody knows, my clients are at a 35% federal rate. If it were this year, it'd be a 39.6 rate, and they are at that nice new Prop 30 rate in California of well over 10%. So say about a 45% marginal tax rate.
And so basically what we were looking at is, an extra $45,000 of tax benefits, basically. Mm-hmm. And in reality, once we went through the process of, you know, going through a review of the plans, breaking the plans out, taking all the cost data, on the building itself, the roughly $250,000 worth of improvements that were made to the building, we go through that process, break the plans down, allocate the various line items to their true useful lives. In this case, 5 years, 15 years, and 39 years. And in actuality, we came out with about a $150,000 increase in depreciation expense, and at roughly
saving almost $70,000 of income taxes for my client. So my client who was going to owe over $200,000 of tax, well, we didn't cut it in half, but we made a lot of progress to making it less.
And actually, over the next few years, that increase in cash flow will continue to improve.
Right, yeah. For example, for this year, 2013, we're going to have more depreciation in 2013 than we otherwise would have had if we didn't do the work. Same for 2014. It's many, many years before it starts going the other way. And given my clients' ages, they're both in their 70s, most likely one of them will pass on in the next 15 years or so, in which case we'll get a new tax cost to, again, depreciate, you know, to further depreciate the building all over again. probably do another Costech study when that happens.
Absolutely.
And actually, you know, that's something a lot of people miss when there's a step up in basis because of death and the decedent owns investment property or commercial property. They usually don't think about doing a Costech study. They just start taking new depreciation because it's like a gift from the government to begin with. You know, this step up in basis, but it definitely applies when you get step up because of somebody passing.
Actually, we're starting on a project tomorrow that was exactly that case. Husband and wife owned the building. The wife passed away. He knew he was going to have a step up in basis. He called his appraiser, who happens to be an individual that we've done some work with in the past, and he immediately suggested to him that he really needs to take a look at a Costech study because they've never Costeched the building. And with the step up in basis, it's going to make even more sense.
Yeah, huge increase in depreciation because the typical knee-jerk reaction is, oh, okay, so the building appraises for $10 million, 80% is depreciable, 39 years. It never goes any further than that. And it should. I mean, it should, especially in a situation at the first death where, bear in mind, if the asset is just on somebody's individual return, that surviving spouse, the year after the death, is now a single taxpayer, and they're hitting the higher marginal rates a lot faster than they were hitting the highest marginal rates when they were married filing jointly, unless they get remarried fairly quickly. The point is, you know, they're going to be a single taxpayer where the 35 and the 39.6 rates come in much, much sooner, a couple hundred thousand dollars sooner than married filing jointly, so it can be a potentially huge benefit in a first death of a spouse situation.
And I think there's something, too, that a lot of people don't think about. When that property gets passed on through the estate, and if the depreciation has been accelerated through a cost segregation study, there is no recapture when it gets passed on through the estate.
Hey, we have to capture a break right now, though, Joel. And Richard, hang on. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life after these announcements. All right, welcome back for more of It's Your Money and Your Life. And now over to Richard to thank all of our sponsors.
Thank you, sponsors. Oh, wait, I'm supposed to say more than that. Okay, so the sponsors are...
Is this Ronan Martin or what? I don't...
It's St. Patrick's Day, Joe. Where's the beer?
We go way back.
UBS. Mr. Michael Coranta. Yes, I'll remember to call you tomorrow, Mike. I promise. And Drew Freitas. Again, Barron's top 1,000 in the country, top 100 in the state of California. Way to go, team.
By Barron's Magazine, right?
Barron's Magazine.
Correct.
Sean Puckett, thanks for lunch on Thursday. That was fun. At Regions Bank, best business bank here in San Diego, probably all of Southern California. Of course, Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives, but enough about him. He's got the whole show dominated. Jason Kruger in Signature Analytics, best CFO company on the planet. Our favorite tax season workers, actually the best CPAs on the audit and review side in San Diego, Polito Epic CPAs, Don Epic and Paul Polito. You guys get to play in the basketball pool, right? You better. Rich Gaines, best estate planning attorney in San Diego County with Family Legacy Legal. I know Rich is coming up on the show, I believe, the last Sunday of April. And next Sunday's guest, Mr. Carl Schuler with Business Valuations Limited and Privatus. Carl's going to be talking about what's going on in the estate planning world through the eyes of a valuation expert. Also want to thank our brilliant website hostess, Courtney Laver. Courtney just shot us an email saying she put something up on the website that I asked her to put on the website, but she also announced that her son, speaking about running, her son Eric runs cross country at La Costa Canyon High School, and he just did a 2-mile race in 9:58, which is an average pace of 4:59 per mile. Eric, that is blurry fast. You must have had fire coming off of your shoes. Congratulations.
Slow down and enjoy yourself.
Oh, to be young again. Way to go, Eric, and thank you, Courtney.
And all of our sponsors can be found on our website, which is real easy. If you're in a car driving, all you have to remember is iymoney.com. iymoney.com, short for It's Your Money. And if you click on the sponsors tab, all the information is there, including our guest tonight. His phone number, Joel Grushkin's phone number, is 858-922-1037. 858-922-1037 at Cost Segregation Initiatives. And now back with more of Richard and Joel.
Oh, and if any of our listeners want to hire Courtney, you can't have her for too much time because she does a lot of work for us and we want to monopolize her time. But anyway, so Joel, I know the IRS came out with some temporary regulations. I guess it was about a year ago, maybe April of 2012. I know because I have clients who use these valuable services. The IRS sort of allows us to trying to keep the simple break, the kinds of assets that are associated with real estate into 9 different classes, right?
Well, basically what they're saying now is that anyone that buys a building is going to have to break down their building into approximately 9 systems. And those systems are things like plumbing, your heating, ventilating and air conditioning system, HVAC, electrical, gas distribution, security, fire protection, escalators or elevators, should you have them. And then what's left over is building structure. And those are all the basically 39-year standard elements in a building. You might not have all 8 or 9 of those. You may have 6 or 7.
So when you went out to visit my client, what did you find?
Well, in the type of building that we were dealing with, we were looking at a plumbing system, an HVAC system, electrical, fire protection, and the building structure.
Because it's a single-story building, so things like escalators and elevators, for example.
That's correct. And there was no gas distribution
right.
system just due to the nature of the way it was built.
Right. So things like plumbing, HVAC, electrical, fire protection, 15-year property, 5-year property, what is this?
Those are typically always going to be 39-year property. Now, if we were in a situation with, say, a specialty-type medical building, and we had to worry about cleansing the air and that sort of thing, then we might end up with a specialty air conditioning system, which would then have a 5-year life.
Okay, so if these are typically 39, what kind of things look like 5 or 15-year property?
Typically, if we do some specialty lighting in a building, and we have window coverings, we have carpeting, if because of the nature of the business, we have to bring in more power than what would be standard in the building. All of those things are going to end up being considered personal property because they are special to the nature of the business.
And what kind of personal property did you find in my client's building?
In your client's building, we found things like millwork that was used in the cabinetry.
Mm-hmm.
We found some specialty window treatments. There were portions of the electrical system that were non-standard in the building, so those became personal property. We found some specialty flooring that was in the building, wall coverings, and a fair amount of cabinetry, and then window treatments. And along with some particular special electrical.
Right, I was going to say there was some very special electrical that I knew about. So did you find all this stuff just by looking at it, or did you have to look at other things?
Part of it was visual, but a lot of it was really tearing the blueprints and the as-built drawings apart and then matching off what we saw there against cost data that they had accumulated through their accounting system, receipts and so on.
So in other words, my client, who's very well trained because he's my client, he did things like keep all of his blueprints and he kept all of his receipts for his contractors, right? So you could actually take all of that and study it.
That's correct. And in most cases, if we can get the contract that the building contractor put together to do those improvements, mm-hmm. typically there's going to be line item budgets and we can track that and determine what should be standard and what shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you a question. If with regard to the building itself, if plumbing and electrical, the basic plumbing and electrical was all 39-year property, and the building itself is 39-year property, what was the point in breaking out something like plumbing or electrical? Or let's say, for example, if you have a roof on a building and you break that out, what's the point in even knowing that?
Well, basically, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, Section 263, new guidelines. Those guidelines are really dealing with repair and maintenance of various items within a building. That could be the roof. It could be a portion of the air conditioning system. And what the IRS is now saying is that you cannot just make a decision and say, gee, I had to replace a chiller unit in my HVAC system and the cost was $10,000, but I paid $3 million for my building, so $10,000 isn't material. I'll just expense that this year. The IRS is now saying when you make a comparison, you have to be able to compare that $10,000 chiller to what the HVAC system was valued at the date you bought the building. So that $10,000 might be compared to $100,000. And there's a whole series of tests that the IRS has come up with, and you're going to have to go through that process to really determine whether or not you can expend something or you're going to have to capitalize it.
Yeah, here's what's behind this. The IRS is under the opinion that many taxpayers expense things that are really capital improvements to a building. Capital improvements means that you're adding something or fixing something that increases the value of the building or actually extends the useful life of the building. Whereas a repair is simply, or, you know, like if a pane of glass breaks and you put in a new pane of glass, obviously that's a repair. You can't walk around. I mean, you can't have a building with a, you know, glass pane missing. But on the other hand, if you put in an entirely new plumbing system, that might actually improve the value of your building or extend its useful life. And so the IRS put in these temporary regulations. They put them in because they think a lot of taxpayers are being overly aggressive with expensing repairs.
That's correct. If you go through the examples that they've given, there are about 55 different examples tied up in 183 or 283 pages of these regulations. And they actually do come up with some things where, you know, if you're going to just do some repairs and clean up and maybe replace some flooring tiles and paint some walls and all that, that part could be considered a repair. But if you combine that with knocking out some walls, doing some other things on more of a global scale of your building, that by doing that all together, you're going to put yourself in a position where it now all has to be capitalized.
And something interesting here, the IRS initially said this was supposed to be done for 2012 tax returns, but it's been extended or pushed back for 2 years for implementation, not until 2014. But I query, I've met a lot of CPAs who say, well, therefore, I'm not going to worry about it for 2 years. Is that a smart approach?
We don't think it is, because what's going to happen, they've given you the option. And you can put it into place for 2012. You can wait till 2014. The problem being that if you wait till 2014, the way the draft is written now, you will probably have to go back and take everything that was expensed as a repair or maintenance item, bring that back into income, and then go through the process of trying to figure out how you're going to keep from paying taxes on that.
Right. That would be for the open years that preceded 2014, which typically would be 3 years, I guess 2013, 12, and 11, if I'm reading the temporary regs right, that you may have to go back and amend tax returns.
Yeah. Let's take a pause right there. The retrieve got to take a break. We'll be right back with more It's Your Money and Your Life after these announcements. We are back with the last segment of It's Your Money and Your Life with Richard Musio and our special guest Joel Grushkin talking about cost segregation. And Richard, should we mention some of those areas and the properties that Joel's
Yeah, I want to talk about some kinds of property, but one last thing on my client's case study, Joel. So you guys went through and you did great work. But you also isolated an asset that was identified as 15-year property called land improvements. Now, to preface my question, most people, most clients, most accountants, most CPAs say land. Well, you can't depreciate land. What on earth is land improvements, and how can you get 15-year depreciation on land improvements when you can't depreciate land?
Well, basically, you're correct. You can't depreciate land. However, all the things that are done to the land. And so if you think about, you know, you've got to grade the land, you're going to make improvements to the land. Typically, most people wouldn't consider them part of the building, but you've got walkways, you've got driveways, you've got landscaping, which are all the plants and plant products and grass, the drainage system that had to be put in. You know, we all know what various parts of California, we have problems with drainage, so we've got to put in a system underground to get that water out. All of those things are considered land improvements, and by code, they have a 15-year life. Now, you can't just automatically put those on your depreciation schedule, because the IRS is going to come in and say, how did you arrive at that? Mm-hmm. How do you know that? Where, you know, what's the square footage of it? Same thing as we talked about these various systems, Richard. One of the things that Section 263 will give you is as long as you have documented the costs, let's say you've got an office building, you've got a tenant moving out, and it's a 4,000 square foot suite, and typically the first thing that happens when a tenant moves out is you demo that space because the new tenant wants a different floor plan, and you've got to take all those walls out and put new walls in. Part of what 263 allows is that if you have the calculation to show what the cost, what the square footage of the walls was, the linear feet of the wiring and so on, everything that was in that suite, it hasn't been fully depreciated. A lot of it was 39-year life. Whatever portion hasn't been depreciated, as long as you can support those costs, you get to write the balance of that off on your return.
Yeah, and this is the thing that most CPAs are missing. Especially when they say, I'm going to worry about this in 2014. They're just missing this point, that this is an opportunity to actually save money for your real estate clients. Even though the IRS put it in because they think people are being overly aggressive on expensing repairs, this is actually an opportunity for CPAs to save money for the real estate owners.
Well, we're working on some buildings right now that are being acquired, and the plan is, in one case, they're going to renovate it all right away, and that's great. We're going to pick up all the costs and deal with that and allocate that to Lifetimes. However, we have other situations where you may occupy that building for a year or 2 years, and then you decide you're going to renovate. Mm-hmm. Well, if we've done a study on it, and we have all the cost data, and it's been allocated to the various Lifetimes, then you tear all that out and renovate. You can take a write-off for that portion that hasn't been fully depreciated.
Yeah, I mean, huge ability. I mean, huge tax savings if you're doing this the right way. So Joel, I know you worked with another one of my clients with a very large apartment building complex. Tell us about that success story without mentioning any names.
Well, I think we've done a number of projects, multifamily, so large apartment projects in different parts of the country. And I think the one that comes to mind was a property that had been acquired 4 or 5 years mm-hmm. ago.
I think it was 2008.
And we came in and looked at the way it was depreciated. It was all basically done straight line. We ran the numbers on that, came up with an estimate, and then went ahead and did the study. And the increase in depreciation for the 2011 tax year was about $1.6 million. And, you know, when we look at that tax bracket, probably about $900,000 worth of free cash flow.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
That's a serious number.
Huh. So let me ask you about different kinds of real estate. I have a client who's rehabbing a hotel. Good, bad, indifferent?
Absolutely. A great type of property because depending on the caliber of hotel it is.
High-end.
High-end hotel. You've got high-end finishes. You've got chair rails. You've got all kinds of fancy molding, crown molding, whatever it might be. Expensive carpets. Various types of decorator items that are used. A lot of that is five-year property.
Same thing then for senior living, assisted living. We have lots of that here on the West Coast.
Absolutely. Again, depending on how the property's built, the level of finishes that are used can totally change the cash flow of that property.
And tons of mini storage, which usually doesn't involve a ton of construction. How about mini storages?
Well, mini storage is one that I think a lot of people would be surprised about because you just don't think there's that much there. But in reality, the newer the mini storage facility, the smaller the amount of structure there is, and everything basically inside the four walls is movable, and it basically all falls into a category of five-year property.
Yeah, because the business model there is to be able to move things, to be able to set up space that's ideal for, well, maximizing cash flow. So you want movable components.
Absolutely.
Met a gentleman recently who's going to be starting a microbrewery. Won't say where or who because we've got to keep things confidential. Yeah, specialized restaurants.
We're going to wrap it pretty quick, though,
okay.
Richard. So, but anyway,
that's another good candidate.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's so much specialty equipment in there.
All right. Well, Joel, thanks so much for being our guest. Get over to CostSegAnalyst.com if you're a broker or attorney or whatever. Joel's can save you a lot of money. Thank you to Justin Hart on our board. did a great job tonight. And thanks to Craig Blanke, our con executive. Thank you to Dave Ziff, our programming genius. And thank you to Richard for being a great host tonight. You have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
That's right. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Drive safely. Good night.
Southern California, I'm Fletcher Jones Jr. You've heard me say that Fletcher Jones Motor Cars only chooses the best of the best when it comes to our Platinum Pre-Owned. Here are just a few examples of how rigorous our exclusive Platinum certification process really is. We include a maintenance service on each vehicle, whether it's due or not. We do not certify a vehicle with more than 55,000 miles as Platinum Pre-Owned. Mercedes-Benz allows up to 75,000 miles. At Fletcher Jones Motor Cars, we perform a detailed 80-point frame inspection on every vehicle. This exceeds the manufacturer's requirements. We know you can buy a used Mercedes-Benz from any dealer, but Fletcher Jones provides the highest quality certified pre-owned vehicles available anywhere. And you can still get all the complimentary amenities afforded new car buyers. There's only two of us that'll know you're not driving a brand new Mercedes-Benz, and we're not talking. Call us at 949-718-3000. Visit us at fjmercedes.com, or better yet, drive over today to Jamboree at the 73.
Fletcher Jones Motor Cars, Mercedes-Benz, Newport Beach.
We follow the story.